X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date. This week on the show, we're discussing why the Prime energy drink is under scrutiny, and Nestle introduces sugar reduction technology for various products. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com. And this week, I'm joined by Vera Kovacevich and Sarah Hand. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start us off with a story about Prime Energy Drink. Now, this is a very popular beverage that was created by two prominent YouTubers, KSI and Logan Paul, but it's currently facing scrutiny as U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer calls for regulators to investigate its marketing tactics. So concerns have been raised regarding the high caffeine content of the drink, which Schumer alleges is targeting children. The beverage, containing 200 milligrams of caffeine per 355 milliliter can, packs twice the amount of caffeine found in its rival Red Bull. So while each can of Prime Energy carries a clear warning advising against consumption by children under the age of 18, Schumer claims that the product is deceptively packaged and marketed in a manner nearly identical to the brand's caffeine-free variant Prime Hydration. Consequently, unwitting parents have inadvertently purchased the caffeinated version for their children, Schumer stated during a press conference in New York last weekend. Taking to Twitter, the Democratic senator further demanded that the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, initiate an investigation into Prime Energy Drink's high caffeine content and its deliberate targeting of children through social media advertising. So just a little bit of history about Prime. Back in 2022, Logan Paul and KSI, with their combined YouTube following of approximately 48 million, introduced the caffeine-free Prime Hydration drink, which swiftly gained online popularity, leading to long lines outside retailers and even saw enthusiastic dives into store shelves. Prime products garnered a fervent following, resulting in a frenzy that saw these drinks disappearing from shelves or even being sold at exorbitant prices. The brand also secured coveted partnerships, becoming the official sports drink of renowned teams like the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Arsenal Football Club, and the UFC. And there are even whispers of FC Barcelona considering a contract with Prime, potentially replacing its longstanding association with Gatorade. Now, according to David Craig, a professor specializing in social media communications at the University of Southern California, the allure of Prime extends far beyond the drink itself. For consumers, holding a can represents a lot more than just the drink. It's a status symbol, a tangible emblem of membership in a dedicated fan club, and a testament to their sense of belonging within that community. And at the heart of this thriving community stands the faces behind the brand, KSI and Logan Paul. KSI, who's 30, and Paul, who's 28, have amassed, like I said, 48 million at the time at least, subscribers on their combined YouTube channels, with a considerable portion of their fan base being teenage males. And even before the advent of Prime, Paul faced scrutiny for tailoring his content to a young audience, leveraging controversy as a catalyst for viral success. So he's weathered backlash from provocative statements, as well as videos involving tasering deceased rodents and showcasing a tragic incident involving a person who had taken their own life. Now, Craig attributes the duo's appeal to their perpetual youthfulness and rebellious demeanor, and their behavior reflects a sense of extended adolescence that has captivated audiences for over a decade, yielding substantial financial rewards, particularly when Paul and KSI joined forces. Now, before embarking on a business partnership, the two were fierce rivals, exchanging verbal jabs on their respective platforms until they finally faced off in a boxing match. Forbes reported that the match in 2019 generated no less than $900,000 for each participant. Fast forward to 2022, and the Washington Post revealed astonishing sales figures of $250 million with the launch of Prime. So back to the energy drink itself. In January of this year, the caffeinated Prime energy drink was launched, promoted as both sugar-free and vegan. Adhering to responsible consumption guidelines, each can of the beverage clearly cautions against its consumption by individuals under the age of 18, caffeine-sensitive individuals, and pregnant women and breastfeeding women. And during a press conference on Sunday, Senator Schumer emphasized the need for the FDA to conduct a thorough investigation into a Prime energy drink, which he referred to as a cauldron of caffeine that poses significant health risks for children. Schumer's announcement served as a public service warning for parents, particularly focusing on how the product is promoted online. And he expressed concern about the extensive advertising campaign employed by Prime, targeting children, raising awareness of the beverage among young consumers. Just to give you an idea of the amount of caffeine, a single 12-ounce can of Prime Energy contains as much caffeine as 2 cups of coffee or approximately 6 cans of Coca-Cola. With 200 milligrams of caffeine, it surpasses the content of other energy drink brands like Red Bull, which has 80 milligrams per 8.4-ounce can, and Monster, which contains a close, but not as much, 160 milligram per 16-ounce can. Now, according to the American Academy of Children and Adolescent Psychiatry, there is no established safe caffeine dose for children. The group advises that children under 12 avoid caffeine entirely, with those aged 12 to 18 should be limiting their intake to approximately 100 milligrams a day. But regardless of age, excessive consumption of caffeine can lead to sleep deprivation, anxiety, nausea, decreased appetite, headaches, and dizziness, according to the National Institutes of Health. Disturbingly, though, there have been reports of a child in Wales experiencing a cardiac arrest after consuming Prime. Even before Schumer's public warning, some schools in the UK had already implemented bans on Prime drinks. In a letter addressed to the FDA, Schumer outlined 4 key areas that he believed warranted investigation, and those are the energy drink's claims regarding enhanced athletic performance and focus, its intensive advertising on social media platforms, its labeling and warning practices, and its remarkably high caffeine content. In response, though, a representative from Prime Energy emphasized to CNN that the drink's caffeine content is comparable to other best-selling energy beverages and remains within the legal limits of the countries where it is sold. And they assured the public that Prime Energy is adhering to all FDA guidelines, or it did, prior to its market release. So, I mean, just reading about how much caffeine is in each can of Prime, it would probably put me into, I'd probably have some sort of cardiac event because I don't even drink regular coffee. And one thing that, was striking about this story is that Prime is not just an energy drink. It also has that hydration drink. And I think there was a lot of confusion among parents and even children probably who maybe mistakenly picked up a can of the energy drink instead of the hydration drink. And now if you look at the two bottles, one is in a can, the energy drink, and one is in a bottle. I'm wondering, and I want to know your thoughts on this, like how valid you think that Schumer's response to this is. Do you think that he is making a proper case? Obviously, there is a lot of caffeine, but if they are adhering to, FDA guidelines, then it should be okay. So I'd like to know your thoughts on this.
Yeah, my immediate reaction is that if they're within the, legal allowed limit of the amount of caffeine in the beverage, then I'm not quite sure as far as that claim is concerned, whether or not Prime is really doing anything wrong here. I think the claim that they're, aggressively marketing this towards children or at least adolescents, I think is probably not far off considering the creators and their audience and their YouTube following. But I think that gets at the heart of a larger issue, which is how do you hold influencers and these content creators with such a large following, particularly among young people, how do you hold them accountable for the things that they're promoting? I'm not sure that there's a ton of accountability right now. Speaking at least from the perspective of a parent, I don't have kids that are old enough that I need to sort of worry about this right now, but I can see that if I you know, had kids that were fans of these two YouTubers, you know, wanted to drink the drink that they were trying to sell them, maybe it would be tough to tell between the two different drinks. But on the other hand, I think, you know, that's also their branding. It has their logo on it. So I'm not sure. I'm interested to see what your perspectives are.
Yeah, like, I haven't actually seen the can versus bottle, what you've mentioned, Sydney. If it's, like, the same color and everything, I could see why people would get confused, because lots of times, like, the same drink is sold in a can and a bottle, right? So I think that's just a fault on their product design and marketing. I have heard that the Prime Energy drinks are actually being recalled in Canada because you're not allowed to have 20 milligrams of caffeine content in a can in Canada. I think the limit is around 180.
Oh, sorry, rather than 20, did you mean 200? 200,
sorry, I meant 200. So in Canada, so basically what I read on a CBC article, and that's one of our biggest media outlets in Canada, is that, you know, the 200 milligram can of Prime Energy is actually not even allowed to be imported into the country, but somehow it was, and it was sold here. You know, Prime Energy had to recall their drinks in Canada because it's violating Health Canada regulations, and it shouldn't have gotten into store shelves in the first place. Mm. And yeah, Health Canada's limit for these kind of energy drinks is 180 milligrams of caffeine per can. Mm. So they were over. And it just shows me, like, I mean, they obviously didn't do great research on their product for it to get to this stage. I think, especially if you aim to, like, export to Canada, I feel like, you know, they should have taken that into consideration. Now, the company did say, oh, we have 140 milligram cans for the Canadian market, but that's not even verified yet, you know? So, you know, I think their violations in other countries like Canada are more severe than what's happening in the States. And I'm actually glad that Canada has such, you know, more strict rules for caffeine content in cans because, yeah, a child may drink it by accident.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, from my perspective, I think that whenever you let a business or an industry regulate itself, they're not going to do a good job of that. So I'm also wondering, like, shouldn't the onus be on, I don't know, retailers? Can any kid just go into a store right now and buy any kind of energy drink, like, regardless of whether it's Prime or Monster or whatever? If they shouldn't be drinking any caffeine, like, who's responsible for making sure that they're not getting access to that? And I mean, I'm thinking about it compared to something like, you know, alcohol. We've got, you know, special rules in place. You have to be a certain age. Cigarettes, things like that. To try and block access from kids, you know, accessing these substances. I don't know if the same sort of thing has to be in place for energy drinks. I'm not sure. You definitely can't leave it up to the company to not market to children, because they can and they will. And I don't think you can also leave it up to parents, because at a certain age, kids are going to be out on their own and they'll have their own spending money and they're going to go to the store and they're going to buy things like this. So I don't know who should be responsible for preventing kids from accessing this, whether or not, you know, Prime is allowed to have that much caffeine in their beverages to begin with.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, the rules are very strict and there with alcohol, let's say, but I've never witnessed, you know, a kid trying to purchase an energy drink and the person saying, can I have your ID, please? I think it's more of a caution on the bottle and recommendation than a strictly enforced, you know, law. So that's a really good point. And, you know, kids can kind of, like, get their hands on anything these days. You know, we talk about, like, vaping and stuff, and obviously those rules are in place, but kids still get their hands on them, whether it's, you know, older siblings or whoever, like, they'll get their hands on it somehow. And I feel like it's kind of similar with Prime energy drink and other energy drinks, let's say. And yeah, I have a tough time fully placing the blame on any one person involved in this, because like there's just so many factors and people involved in like the illicit trade in Canada, let's say. I don't even know if it's officially called a ban, if it wasn't even allowed to be sold yet in Canada. Like I'm not surprised that it made it past the border and that it was sold, but I can't blame, you know, Logan Paul and KSI for that. Even though I don't like him as a person, I just think they have this audience of young kids who look up to them and obviously want to buy what they're selling. And I think there's no issue with them consuming the hydration drinks, since that has no, it's basically like a Gatorade or equivalent, I would say. I think there's nothing wrong with that. I just think where they went wrong was not necessarily with the caffeine content, but potentially just suggesting or advertising for it on their channels and then impressionable kids wanting to try it. And You're right, Sarah, like it's not, they have this audience and kids are impressionable and they want to be part of this, like this culture. They've amassed such a huge following and they're cool, right? They're cool. So yeah, I'm curious to see whether, you know, Schumer actually has a case or not, and whether the FDA will actually look into this. I feel like there's not much to look into, to be honest. Like, I don't think he has the biggest of cases. All right, moving on to another story. So Nestle's ongoing R&D has led to a groundbreaking sugar reduction technology that not only significantly diminishes sugar content, but also brings additional benefits to a wide array of products. So this latest innovation follows a similar breakthrough years ago aimed explicitly at the candy industry. This resulted in the brief existence of the Wowsome candy line in the UK, which was first introduced in 2018, but lived only for 2 years and was discontinued in 2020. In its newest initiative, Nestle uses an enzymatic method to cut down intrinsic sugar levels in ingredients like malt, milk, and fruit juices by as much as 30%, with only a minor effect on the product's flavor and texture. So the sugar-reduced ingredients are then incorporated into the recipes for a variety of products. And there is no requirement for additional sweeteners or bulking agents to substitute the removed sugar volume. The company's patented sugar reduction approach also enhances the prebiotic fiber content when applied to milk-based products. Preliminary clinical trials suggest these fibers could encourage the growth of several kinds of beneficial bacteria, resulting in an improved microbiome composition in healthy adults. In a press release, Nestle's chief technology officer, Stefan Pulser, said, "Sugar reduction across our portfolio remains a top priority. This new technology is a true breakthrough, as we can reduce sugar without adding sweeteners while preserving a great taste, all at minimal cost increase." In addition, our scientists discovered that the sugar reduction generates prebiotic fibers that support the microbiome, which is an additional benefit. We are now accelerating the global rollout across formats and categories. So the sugar reduction method was initially trialed in cocoa and malt-based ready-to-drink beverages in Southeast Asia. And over the past year, Nestle has successfully integrated this sugar reduction technique into the manufacturing processes of cocoa and malt-based powdered beverages like Milo, in multiple countries across Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And since 2021, this sugar reduction technology has been implemented in over 200,000 tons of cocoa and malt-based beverages. The ongoing expansion will soon extend to other product categories like dairy powders. However, Nestle isn't the only food giant actively working to reduce sugar in its food and beverage products. PepsiCo, for example, has committed to reducing sugar and is striving towards a target that at least two-thirds of its drinks will have 100 or fewer calories from added sugar per 12 ounce serving by 2025. General Mills, as another example, has reformulated many of its cereals and snacks to reduce sugar content, particularly focus on products marketed to children. And Kraft Heinz is also working on sugar reduction across its product portfolio, especially in products such as ketchup and salad dressings, which is where sugar hides and you don't think about it. So Nestle's development of cutting-edge technologies reflects its persistent commitment to enhancing the nutritional value of its products, promoting responsible consumption, and encouraging a balanced diet. And this new sugar reduction strategy complements a broad spectrum of existing solutions that Nestle has developed over the years in conjunction with external innovation partners and suppliers. These include natural sweeteners, flavors that enhance sweetness or mask bitterness, as well as natural bulking agents like fiber, cereals, and tailor-made dairy and cocoa powders. So, you know, in the past, we talk a lot about like artificial sweeteners and sugar substitutes and whatnot. And I feel like since those are somewhat controversial and we may not know, you know, the full effects of them, I think this is a really excellent solution, which is to not get rid of sugar and still use sugar in products, but just reduce it by a decent amount. I want to know your thoughts on this, like, because I know, Sarah, your thoughts on some artificial sweeteners and that sometimes it's just best to eat sugar in moderation. So I'd like to know your take on this and whether you think it's a good sort of solution.
You know what? I think it is a good solution because they're saying they're not relying on adding sweeteners, right, whether natural or artificial. And I think that's very timely considering what's come out, you know, in recent weeks even about aspartame and things like mm-hmm. that being classified as a carcinogen. I think in order to keep up, these food companies really need to, you know, innovate in other ways. So I think it is really smart and a good solution. When I look at this, I wonder kind of what's the impetus for change on Nestle's part? Do you think that they're wanting to kind of get on board with the lower sugar because they know that's what people are looking for? Or do you think the draw is really for them to maybe be able to have some functional food type labeling on their confectionery products? Do you think they're looking to be able to say, you know, this product has some prebiotics in it, which is not something you would normally associate with a candy bar? What do you guys think?
That's a very good point. I think, you know, Nestle's probably been working on this for many years, and they have like a very, you know, extensive research team. I think it can be a little bit of both. I think they've recognized that consumers are looking for healthier alternatives, and that definition of what healthier alternatives is changes with the news of aspartame and various studies that come out about artificial sweeteners. So I think they sort of have like their head in both camps a little bit, because they don't want to change recipes per se. They don't want to change their products. They just want to offer consumers something that's slightly healthier. And then it also has this added, you know, functional benefit. And I guess I'm not sure how functional or, you know, how much prebiotic of an element it will, you know, will, like, you know, I'm not sure if they're going to fully like add that on. Cause let's say you're eating a chocolate bar and you're not thinking like, oh, this has prebiotic, like you're not thinking that, it's true. So I wonder if they actually will advertise it as that, because that could potentially confuse consumers as well. They might think it's like, oh, this is just like a functional version of a Kit Kat and not, you know, and not the real thing. So I think they will do what they need to do to tell consumers that it is you know, reduced in sugar, but not to the point where it confuses them so much that they think it's a different product entirely. But yeah, that's an excellent point. I do wonder why?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think this is great timing for Nestle because, like, I think last week you talked about that marketing food to children rule.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, was that recommended by the WHO, right?
Yes.
So So this kind of technology, I think, is great because they can say, like, oh, we've cut down on sugar by 30%. This is a great treat for children, right? Mm-hmm. I think the timing is great for Nestle. Their process is really interesting. I wonder how, like, expensive it was to develop that whole enzymatic process you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, lactose-free milk or, like, low-lactose milk, that kind of idea to lower, like, a type of sugar. So, yeah, I think it's great. I think it came at the right time. And, yeah, I honestly think if it still tastes great, which they're saying it does, like, you don't need to add anything, I don't see why not. They couldn't cut the sugar down on most products.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also, it is patented, so I'm wondering, you know, who else will follow, or if other companies will, especially in the confectionery space, will follow up with their own sugar reduction technology. Because even though, you know, the companies that I mentioned who are, and there's plenty more, by the way, who are working on reducing the sugar content in their products, it doesn't necessarily mean they're using this type of technology. It could just mean they're replacing it with artificial sweeteners or other things. So that's important to note that, you know, sugar reduction doesn't always mean just taking out sugar and not replacing it. It can mean a variety of different things. And in this case, I think Nestle has approached it in a great way.
I think that's what makes it such a interesting approach is that you're right, Sydney. Oftentimes, reducing something, reducing sugar, reducing fat, means you're increasing the amount of something else that's often an undesirable as well, right? Because you're taking something out, you've got to replace it with something to maintain taste and texture and things like that. I think that's great. They've been able to reduce sugar without having to add any other kind of sweeteners and things like that. And you know what? Maybe from Nestle's perspective and all of the other companies that you mentioned that are working to reduce sugar content, I wonder if they're seeing, you know, the writings on the wall in terms of sugar. You know, people know they're looking out for lower sugar products. They know we shouldn't be consuming as much sugar as we are. Maybe they're thinking, you know, regulators will kind of come up with a standard for how much sugar, you know, is okay to be in a product. Who knows? So maybe they're kind of preparing for that and also reacting to the change in consumer shopping behavior. Like, gone are the days when people are just buying things and not looking at the labels. You know, because when people weren't looking at the labels, it was easy to buy ketchup and salad dressings and especially these products where you wouldn't expect to find a lot of sugar. Mm-hmm. It was easy to just buy those and enjoy them and you go back for more because they've got sugar and that's addictive, right? And so I think now that people are a lot more aware of what they're consuming and how much of it they're consuming, you know, companies have definitely been forced to put some resources behind these kinds of initiatives, and particularly in the sugar reduction space.
Mm-hmm. And if the big ones don't, then smaller ones will. There's such a huge market for lower or no sugar condiments, like we were talking about, like barbecue sauces, which there was a point in time where I was trying to reduce my sugar, and I was, you're so right. I mean, I was reading every single label, and I was flabbergasted by how much sugar was in like a very small, like a tablespoon or something of barbecue sauce or ketchup. And these are small serving sizes. You usually have more than a tablespoon or two of these condiments. So you're totally right. We're very hyper aware of not just sugar, but calories and other things. So, and I think Nestle and others have tapped into that, and they know, and they're always keeping an eye on trends and what consumers are looking for. So yeah, I think this is coming at a very good time.
Just one question, like, do you know when these products are going to be coming out?
I do not. They recently, you know, this news came out only a couple days ago of their press release, but I think they're planning on, like, they have trialed them in other areas of the world, but I think they're planning for a roll, like a more global rollout relatively soon. You excited to get your hands on a reduced sugar chocolate bar?
Yeah, no, because I drink every day. I drink Nestle's instant coffee mix with the sugar and cream and coffee. It's like a 3-in-1 mix.
So
I could just buy the 2-in-1 mix, which doesn't have sugar, but I don't know. Yeah, it won't taste as nice.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see, like, which products that this new technology will be incorporated into. It seems like beverages will be a huge part of it, and I'm not sure if the instant coffee will be, or whether it's more going to be for, like, the ready-to-drink beverages. But I'll be on the lookout for sure, because this has been in the making for a while with Nestle, and this could be really, really huge for them. All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.